From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, it's Election Day.
The Democrat agenda is a socialist nightmare for our country. The Republican agenda is the American dream, and that's what we're doing. We're bringing back the American dream.
Well, have you voted? There is still time, as the polls will be open for another 2 to 3 hours, depending upon where you live. So if you haven't voted, do it. Do it now. It's your responsibility. All right, what does history tell us about these midterm elections, and how might tonight's outcome shape the next 2 years? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, is here for that discussion in just a moment. Also, in the latest display of intolerance, a university in Ohio has reprimanded a professor. All right, here's what it's for. Are you listening? For refusing to use the preferred pronoun of a student. ADF Senior Counsel Travis Barham has the details. And tonight, we'll be providing election analysis every 30 minutes beginning at 7:35 p.m. Eastern Time at TonyPerkins.com. We'll have some of the candidates whose races that we've been following at both the state and the federal level, along with reports on a number of the ballot initiatives that are taking place around the nation. So that begins at 7:35 Eastern Time. FRC Action's Brent Kylan will stop by a little bit later here on Washington Watch with a preview of what we'll be tracking tonight. And later on Washington Watch, I'll take your phone calls. We'll give those of you who weren't able to get through last night to weigh in on the discussion that we were having about the top issue of consideration in deciding how you vote. All right, important. It's a very enlightening discussion, and I want to compare it to what we might see in some of the exit polling that comes out. So we'll give you a chance to weigh in a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the Republican Party is looking to defy history and keep the majority in the House of Representatives. Now, Democrats are pinning their hopes that they're going to win the House, that they're going to ride the wave of history and capture enough seats to make Nancy Pelosi the House Speaker. Well, what we do know is that going into this election, there is a lot of energy. We know that there's been more ballots cast. In some cases, early voting has exceeded what previous voting in the regular voting take place, if that makes sense. The early votes have exceeded what was cast in prior elections. A lot of enthusiasm out there. Now, historically, the party of the sitting president loses ground in the midterm elections. In most cases, I think, with just maybe two or three exceptions. Now, a recent article in CNS News reviews the biggest midterm House losses since World War II and some of the gains, and goes into a little deeper into why. And I think it's very insightful because really there's no model that you can really use to predict the outcome of this election. Well, joining us now to talk about these historical midterms and what it might mean for tonight is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I found your article. And you like to dig into numbers. I know you like numbers because you went through and you looked at the numbers, you know, going all the way back to early 1900s and then post-World War II. Give us the thumbnail sketch. And I may have found a factor that drives some of these elections based on your piece. So give us a thumbnail sketch.
Okay, well, it's interesting. If you go back in 1911, Congress passed a law setting the number of House members at 435. So since then, except for a couple of years when they added Alaska and Hawaii and had an anomaly, we've had 435 members in the House of Representatives. We have had 26 midterm elections since then, since 1914. And in those 26 elections, Tony, the president's party loses an average of 30 seats. That is the average. Now, if you cut out the stuff before World War II and you just go for the 18 midterm elections from 1946 forward, the president's party loses an average of 26 seats. And as you mentioned, there's a three that stand out. The three biggest were 2010, when Barack Obama was in his first term, the Democrats lost 63 seats in the House of Representatives. And then the next big one was 1946, which was right after World War II, when Harry Truman had taken over for FDR, who had died in office. Democrats lost 55 seats in that midterm. And then in 1994, we remember when the Republicans took back the House for the first time in 40 years, Bill Clinton lost 54 seats in the House. So those three, Obama, Truman, Clinton, 2010, 1994, 1946, those were the big disastrous midterms in the post-World War II era.
Now, let's take a quick analysis of those three. Obama, which I was here and I can speak to. I wasn't around when Truman was here. But Obama, I don't go back that far. Obama, that was post-Obamacare. In fact, you go back a little bit further in 2006 when the Democrats actually took the House back from the Republicans as a result of Rahm Emanuel kind of crafting a really good plan to take out moderate Republicans with more conservative Democrats, socially conservative Democrats. Then Obama forcing them to vote for a anti-life bill, Obamacare. They were taken out in 2010, the wave of the Tea Party and conservatives. So that was a huge, a big policy push that took the nation farther than it wanted to go. Clinton, very similar in pushing his Hillary care, in pushing social policy. He also had the don't ask, don't tell. You were pushing much further than the nation was ready to go. Truman's case, what was the factors in the Truman election?
Well, it's interesting. In Truman's year, 1946, and this I didn't know this till I got the data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the economy contracted by 11.6%. in 1946. So the World War II was over, and suddenly the economy was off that war mode, and it was contracting rapidly. And also, I think, Tony, if you look at, there was a pattern that really started in 1938 where America got fed up with FDR. FDR was elected in 1932 in the Great Depression. In his first midterm, he was actually one of the three times since 1914 when a candidate, the president, won some seats. But in every midterm after that, Americans took House seats away from Roosevelt. And, of course, you know, he was sort of frozen in power after Pearl Harbor. But even during World War II, Americans were taking House seats away from FDR. So I think when the war ended, America just said, okay, we're done with the Democrats. They're not good for where we need to go now. And they just threw them out of power.
All right. You mentioned the economy. And looking through these other races, in fact, cases where you had only two presidents, and I'm quoting from your article, Terry Jeffrey. You can find his article at TonyPerkins.com. Only two presidents since World War II have seen their party gain seats in midterm elections. One was after the 9/11 attack. In 2002, George Bush was president, gained 8 seats. That was kind of that war footing, was it not? Kind of that rally around the flag?
Absolutely. That's what I think. America really came together after the 9/11 attacks. There had been a lot of controversy over whether George W. Bush actually was president because he didn't win the majority vote. They had the recount in Florida. And I think the nation was sort of atoning for that and saying, let's come together and rally around this president.
Okay, 1998, just a few years before that, Bill Clinton's second term, Republicans controlled a majority of the House. Again, I'm quoting from Terry's article. And the annual unemployment rate and real annual GDP growth were both at 4.5%. So I would say Americans were pretty content, right?
Without question. And you had a Republican majority Congress. And even though Clinton was able to pick up 4 seats in the House, the Republicans retained control of Congress. So Clinton did not take back control. He just was able to win 4 seats.
But the economy was a factor. And I look at you as you lay out these different midterm elections, the 16 since World War II, the economy seems to factor in there pretty good. And if I'm not missing something, the trend seems to be if the economy's doing well, we see less of a hammering of the president who's in power. If the pocketbook is good, there seems to be some consistency.
I think that's true. And I think that when you have, like in 1946, where the economy was just absolutely collapsing, and in 1938, when actually the economy was not doing well and Roosevelt lost 71 seats, that people are angry about the economy. That's not going to help the president. So when the president has done very well, the economy wasn't necessarily doing great. In 2002, the economy only grew by 1.7%. But again, that was that post-9/11 year. But as you said, with Clinton in 98, only 4.5% unemployment, 4.5% economic growth. A similar case in 1962, Jack Kennedy. He only lost 4 seats in the House, which actually is way below that 30 average. But unemployment was only 5.5%, and the economy was cooking at 6.1%. So people weren't worried about the economy. They were okay with Kennedy, and they didn't really, you know, harm him in the midterm.
Now, I didn't mention
Reagan, by the way, in 86.
Yeah, I didn't mention in 2010, I was talking about Obamacare, but also when you looked at the unemployment rate was at 9.6%, and the GDP was only at 2.6% when the Democrats lost 63 seats. So
Right. It
appears there's some connection there. So let's take that now and let's look at the current GDP and the unemployment numbers, and what would that suggest might happen today?
Well, clearly people are not angry at President Trump because of the economy. Everybody knows the economy is doing great. The Democrats know it. The liberal media know it. As the president said the other night, they don't want to talk about it.
But so they're really not going around. They're not going around saying it's the economy, stupid.
No, they can't, and they know it. I mean, we virtually have full employment. And, Tony, the last time the U.S. GDP grew by 3% or more in a full calendar year was 2005, 13 years ago. And there's a very, very good chance that we're going to see 3% growth this year. So this is the best economy. I mean, there's a lot of adults in this country. This is the best economy they've seen in their adult lives.
I mean, unemployment at a near 50-year low, the GDP in the second quarter was 4.2%. I mean, so clearly, as you said, the economy's off the table here. But again, if that's one of the factors as we look at these midterm elections, this would suggest that the blue wave is not going to be as intense as some have predicted.
Right. That is my belief. I don't think you're not going to see Trump hit with the 63 loss seats that we had with Obama or the 54 with Clinton. And, I agree with you. The economy clearly is an indicator. That's off the table for Trump. The economy is not going to hurt him. But there's an obvious, and you mentioned it jumps out at you when you look at Obama and Clinton. Both of them were pushing socialized medicine. Obama pushed Obamacare. Clinton pushed Hillary Clinton. And the voters came and they wiped them out. And not only was it they lost more seats than anybody else, Clinton, was outdone by one seat by Truman, but they actually lost control of the House of Representatives, which is also a rare thing. When a president controls it, his party may lose some seats, but to actually lose control of the House, that's only happened 5 times, going all the way back to 1914. So those were pretty remarkable elections in 2010 and 1994.
Well, we will. We don't have long to wait to see what the outcome is of this midterm election. Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to talk to you. Interesting article. I love the way you dig into these stories and pull out the facts. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tony.
All right. To read it, go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Coming up next, an Ohio university has put religious freedom on trial, punishing a Christian professor for the wrong pronoun. That's next. Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the 5-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, known as SOCE, claiming that they are fraudulent, ineffective, and harmful. But are they? LGBT activists claim that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed by therapy or counseling. They also claim that people who attempt to change their sexual orientation end up more depressed and suicidal. As it turns out, studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are in fact very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. For a thorough analysis of all the major studies done on the effectiveness of SOCE, visit frc.org/SOCE. Again, that's frc.org/SOCE.
Choosing the right candidate to vote for can be difficult with all the media spin and political rhetoric. Each candidate will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to protecting your religious freedom, standing for family values, and defending the sanctity of human life. FRC Action will be traveling across the country on our values bus. We want to keep you up to date on the latest inside news from the campaign trail and inform you about each candidate's positions on our country's most vital issues. Go to valuesbustour.com for more information. Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And just a reminder, tonight, beginning at 7:35 Eastern Time, we'll be having election analysis, 5 to 7 minutes every 30 minutes, just to kind of give you an update on what's happening, give you our analysis. You can find it at either on Facebook Live or TonyPerkins.com. All right, a philosophy professor in Ohio filed a lawsuit against his university on Monday for punishing him after he refused to refer to a student according to their preferred gender pronoun. In January, Dr. Nicholas Merriweather, a professor at Shawnee State University in Portsmouth, Ohio, responded to a question from Alina Bruning saying, "Yes, sir." Now, Bruning is a biological male who identifies as a woman. The professor always refers to students as sir or ma'am or Mr. or miss in order to foster an atmosphere of seriousness and mutual respect in the classroom. However, after the class, a student approached Professor Merriweather and told him that he was transgender and demanded that the professor address him with feminine titles and pronouns. When Merriweather did not instantly comply, the student became belligerent, circling him in a threatening way and telling him, quote, "Then I guess this means I can call you an expletive." He then threatened to get the professor fired if he didn't submit to his request. The student ultimately filed a complaint against the professor. With us now is Travis Barham, ADF Senior Counsel, representing Professor Merriweather. Travis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
All right, Travis, did I get the facts of the case right?
You did indeed.
So this is what gives the university the, I mean, what is their motivation here in filing a complaint, essentially putting something in the file of this professor and putting him on notice? I mean, what's the justification here in their eyes?
Well, I think their goal is to force him to say things that he does not believe, and that's just quintessentially un-American. You know, in this country, tolerance is a two-way street, and universities are supposed to be a marketplace of ideas, not an assembly line for one type of thought. And that concept is missed by the administrators at Shawnee State University. And so what they're trying to do here is threaten him or punish him in this instance and then threaten him with further disciplinary actions in the future if he continues to hold to his beliefs and continues to express those beliefs. And that future corrective action could include anything up to termination. So the stakes are very high for Dr. Merriweather. But
now, is Dr. Merriweather tenured?
He is indeed. He is indeed. But whether he's tenured or not, public colleges and universities have no business trying to compel people to express ideological beliefs that they just don't hold.
No, I agree, but it's just interesting that he's tenured, but yet they're still coming after him. You can get away with so much if you're tenured. I mean, that's like the Holy Grail. You can't touch him. So this really, what you're saying is this isn't about a pronoun. This is about an ideology.
I couldn't have said it any better. This is not about a pronoun. This is about an ideology. You cannot force somebody to express an entire worldview that they do not hold. I mean, this is common in a host of other areas. You can tell a lot about a person if they refer to an unborn child as a baby or as a fetus.
You know, right.
That word choice communicates an ideology. And here, when a professor says, I can't call a man a woman, I can't call a woman a man, he's expressing his ideology. And the effort to force him to bow the knee and say something that he does not believe is quintessentially un-American. That is just not what universities are supposed to do, and the government doesn't have that power.
The student is a biological male, wants to be referred to with female pronouns. The professor says, I'm not going to play your make-believe game. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to refer to you as a Mr. or Sir in a respectful manner, as he does everyone else in the classroom. Now, when he was called onto the carpet, so to speak, with the university leadership, he expressed the faith that the fact that he is a Christian. That's not a hidden factor. And they, as I understand what I read, they actually made fun of his faith and said that didn't matter.
Yeah, that is all true, but actually Dr. Merriweather went one step further. He offered, when the student came to him, he offered an accommodation. He said, listen, I'll just call you by your first name, by your last name, whatever legal proper name you want me to use, I'll refer to you as that. I don't have to draw attention to the title, you know, Mr. or Ms.
Okay, wait a minute. That's a very important.
I will try
that's
to
a very important
you
point.
Make you feel comfortable. Yes.
That's a very important point that I didn't pick up on. So he would he offered to refer to him by a first name?
Either a first name or a last name, either one, whichever the student preferred, and offered did that, referred to him by his last name the rest of the semester so as to not draw attention to the issue. And that wasn't good enough for the university. It wasn't good enough for the student. They were insistent that he say something that he doesn't believe and express an ideology that he doesn't believe.
I mean, isn't this what we see in so many of these other cases, like with the bakers and the florists? It's not a matter of tolerating. It's forced acceptance, and you must participate.
That's exactly right.
So what do you think the outcome is going to be here, Travis?
Well, we're very confident in our case. The First Amendment, in fact, the Supreme Court just this past term issued a ruling reiterating the fact that the government cannot compel private citizens, in that case, pro-life pregnancy centers, to say something they don't believe, to endorse abortion. And so the First Amendment principle should apply across the board even-handedly. Professors have great First Amendment protection in the way that they communicate their teaching and their scholarship. And so when the university is trying to force him to say something he doesn't believe, when it's then retaliating against him for expressing his beliefs and trying to punish him, they have engaged in numerous First Amendment violations there. So we look forward to seeing how this plays out. Hopefully the university will come to its senses quickly, but if not, we're there to defend the First Amendment and ensure that Dr. Merriweather can speak the truth.
Well, and ADF does a great job at doing that. The case you made reference to, the NIFLA case out of California, was another ADF case which you won at the Supreme Court. I just hope that it becomes punitive for the college to send a message that this type of trampling of the First Amendment will not be tolerated. Travis Barham, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be tracking this case.
Thank you much.
All right. Great talking with you. All right, folks, coming up next, we'll talk with FRC Action's Brent Kylan, director, and we're going to give you an kind of a highlight of what we'll be talking about tonight in our live coverage of the election. Don't go away. We're back after this. Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Is Planned Parenthood a champion for women? In reality, Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading killer of unborn children. Despite this, they have been hailing themselves as the voice of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities today, their scandals continue to pile up. Planned Parenthood's current motto is care, no matter what. A more fitting motto would be profit, no matter what. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood. Again, that's frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. And we are so glad you have tuned in. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And, all right, tonight, you know, this is Election Day. And, in fact, you still have time to go vote if you have not voted. And I would hope and I would assume that most of you listening are either on your way to the polls as you're getting off work or you've already voted. But it's some of these races are going to be so close that a handful of votes could make the difference. So don't think that it's in the bag. Turnout is extremely heavy today. Now, you may have to wait in a line, but it's worth it, okay? The early voting turnout, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the early voting in some states actually exceeds what the total vote was in the last midterm election. People are energized. Now, we knew the Democrats were going to be energized. The left opposing this president. But conservatives are just as energized. So these elections, I don't think any model is going to be able to accurately predict what might come out tonight. We're just going to have to wait and see. Well, joining now is the director of FRC Action, Brent Kylan, who is just in off the FRC Action Values bus in Missouri, just flew in to be here tonight for our election analysis. Brent, welcome back to D.C.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
Now, you were just in Missouri for a number of events over the weekend. How do things look on the ground there?
You know, the race looks close. We have a number of races there. U.S. Senate races, the one that most people are paying attention to. Some key state races, some key U.S. House races. We talked to a number of people with Get Out the Vote efforts. We passed out a lot of voter guides. Getting a good response overall, Tony. I was encouraged by the people that are participating, the energy there, the people that say, you know, I'm paying attention to this. I'm going to go vote. So I think Missouri particularly will be one of those key states to watch tonight to get a sense for what the overall mood of the country is, but encouraged by what I'm seeing there.
All right, folks, beginning at 7:35 Eastern time, We will be having election analysis every 30 minutes for five, 7 minutes, something like that. It's not going to be long. When folks tune in tonight, they can do so on the FRC Action Facebook or just go to TonyPerkins.com. We'll have it there on the website. What are they going to find out tonight? What are we going to be tracking, Brent?
So we're going to be tracking some of these key races. The big one tonight is the U.S. Senate. The eyes of the nation are really watching that. What's going to happen, as you mentioned just a couple minutes ago, a lot of these U.S. Senate races are very close. So I would echo what you just said. If there's anybody out there hasn't voted yet, please do that. I mean, you're looking at the polling, a bunch of these races are consistently within the margin of error.
And we're going to be looking at some state races that are taking mm-hmm. place, some gubernatorial races. We'll be looking at a number of ballot initiatives that are taking place around the country as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's several, particularly on the life issue, that we're going to be watching. Hopefully getting some perspectives of these candidates who are running. What are they hearing? And as we get a sense and these ballot initiatives come in, the returns come in, we'll get their take on what this means for the country and the next 2 years.
Yeah, we'll have some of the candidates will be joining us. I know we have Mark Meadows, chairman of the Freedom Caucus, will be joining us. Chris Wilson of WPA Intelligence will be joining us with some of the early results analysis. And, of course, we'll have some of our own in-house experts as well. So that begins at 7:35 Eastern time. So basic 7:35, 8:05, 8:35, 9:05. You get it every 30 minutes. At 5 minutes after the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour. The trends, what we see happening going into this election, I was just talking with Terry Jeffrey about it earlier, doesn't really seem to fit any of the historical models.
It really doesn't. And a lot of the predictions going into this year specifically, you look at these early voting numbers, and one expert that I was reading says this model to him looks like somewhere between a presidential and a midterm, yeah. You know, with the presidential, of course, always being higher.
Well, and that could be that, as the president has kind of alluded to, he's on the ballot.
Yes.
Even though he's not on the ballot.
Yes. And we see that energy. I mean, early this year, you look back 10, 11 months ago, everybody was predicting a blue wave. We knew from polling and some election results, the other side was very fired up. It looks like that is being matched now in some of these early voting states, some of the ones with some of these key races that we'll be talking about tonight, some of the hottest races in the country. We know that the registered Republican voter turnout has been a little bit higher than the registered Democrat turnout. And so it looks like, and you can only tell so much from early voting, right. But it looks like there's a lot of energy on both sides.
What were you hearing on the ground, Brad? I know you were on the bus very quickly. What were you hearing in terms of what was motivating people to vote?
The biggest single thing I would have to say was the Kavanaugh thing. We were on the ground when that confirmation happened. And then the closer we got to the election, the more people were paying attention and saying, I'm concerned about what's going on. I'm going to go do something about it at the ballot box.
All right, Brent. Well, we'll talk to you more tonight when we start our analysis at 7:35 Eastern time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks. Coming up next, we're going to go to the phone lines. Did not get to all the calls yesterday as we basically put out the question, what is the issue that determined how you were going to vote or how you vote? So phone lines open up. Opening up 866-372-7234 when we return. What is it? What is it that directs your vote, that guides you in how you're going to vote in the election? What's the top issue? I want to hear from you here on Washington Watch when we return.
Are you ready to vote? Which candidates are actually speaking up for you and your values? Choosing the right candidate to vote for can be difficult with all the media spin and political rhetoric. Each candidate will either be a part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. You can be a part of the solution and make your voice heard by pledging to pray, vote, and stand for your values. FRC Action will be traveling across the country on our Values Bus to meet Values voters like you this fall. We want to keep you up to date on the latest inside news from the campaign trail and help to inform you about each candidate's positions on our country's most vital issues. Go to valuesbusttour.com for our tour dates, voter guides, and so much more. Be a part of the movement. Pledge to pray, vote, and stand for your values. Again, go to valuesbusttour.com and be a part of the movement.
Tony Perkins here, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women. From aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer to these questions should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, claiming they are ineffective and harmful. But are they? Studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. To find out more, visit frc.org/SOCE.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, it's Election Day. I hope you voted. If not, you still have time to get there. In fact, if you are in line, as long as you're in line when the poll closes, you will be able to vote. So get there. Don't be discouraged if there's a long line. Turnout is extremely heavy. I'm not saying that to discourage you. I'm telling you that to encourage you to go and vote. People are expressing themselves. That's how we do that in the republic. We do it at the ballot box. Okay, here's what we were talking about this last night. I want to continue the conversation. What is it? What issue is at the top of your list when you consider your vote and who you're going to vote for? What is it that what's that main issue? All right, let me know. 866-372-7234. You know, keep it short so we can get as many calls as we can, because I want people an opportunity to express themselves. What is it? What is it? Whatever it is, doesn't matter. I'd like to hear it. 866-372-7234. Now, I had an interesting interview yesterday on CNN, a quite lengthy interview. It was on their international channel, appeared later last night on PBS. They used it for that as well. The issue that they like to bring up is how can evangelicals support Donald Trump? Now, let me just say this is designed to distract us from focusing on what is happening, because they bring up these issues of what he did before he was president and the things that he said and so on and so forth. None of it is relevant to where he's at and what he's doing today. Now, I have said repeatedly, most evangelicals were not with the president in the primary. They were supporting other candidates who, you know, quite frankly, in both their personal lives and in their policy positions, were more reflective of evangelicals. The president at that time was not there. But when it we didn't support him in a vacuum. When it came down to having to make a choice between him and Hillary Clinton, you know, what are we going to do? Hillary Clinton, who is going to continue the policies of Barack Obama, one of the most anti-life presidents in the history of this country, who, you know, forcing religious organizations to fund abortion in their health care plans, pushing the LGBTQ agenda, trampling upon religious freedom. She was going to continue. In fact, she was a part of that as the Secretary of State, and she pledged to continue that. And then you had Donald Trump, who, yeah, he had issues. But he wrapped himself in the Republican Party platform, the most conservative platform in party history, chose a solid conservative running mate, pledged to appoint pro-life justices. You know, quite frankly, it's a no-brainer. All right? So that's how we got to the election and through the election, and we got to President Trump. Now, 2 years later, what's happened? Well, he has consistently kept his campaign promises, issuing an executive order to restore religious liberty within the ranks of the federal government, working its way, and it's not fixed completely, but he's working on it. It's going to take a while to restore the damage that was done by the previous administration. Not only has he been restoring religious liberty domestically, but he's been doing it in the foreign policy. As we talked about the other night, the first ever ministerial or meeting designed to advance religious freedom internationally was held by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo back in July. First time ever. Over 80 leaders from 80 countries came, and it's having an effect. It was discussed when I was in the United Arab Emirates last week with the Minister of Tolerance, Islamic country. And he said, you know, we want to host the ministerial to advance religious freedom. They want to host it in the UAE. Now, think about that for a minute. You've got an Islamic country, and as I've talked about last week on the program, if you caught it, they are seeking to be – they do have policies that are more liberal in terms of allowing religious freedom of worship in their country. About 700 minority religious groups, including evangelicals, are free to worship there in that country. But they want to expand that in the Middle East. So they said, we'd love to host. Why is that happening? Well, you have an administration that's made it a priority. The same thing's happening in Egypt, President el-Sisi. They've got a ways to go, but he's working to restore the freedom of worship in that country. Now, I've used the term freedom of worship intentionally because it is different than the freedom of religion, which we understand in this country. But it's a step in the right direction for them. For us, under the previous administration that embraced freedom of worship, it was a step backwards. All that's happening because we have an administration that's put a priority on that. And so this is what's happening as a result of the election. We need to keep our eye on the prize, as the Apostle Paul told the Corinthians, using an analogy for the games that they were very familiar with there in Corinth. Said, keep if you run, you run with your eye on the prize. Well, as Christians in this country, what have we been advocating for? We've been advocating for policies that respect life, which this administration has been doing. We advocate for the freedom to live out our faith in such a way that we can influence our children and the community around us. Well, that's what this administration is doing. But yet we have some that are getting distracted. They're not keeping their eye on the prize. You know, one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. We're taking our eye off the prize. And so, you know, I would just encourage you not to get distracted by the things that, you know, the left would throw out there, the media is saying, all of these things they're trying to latch on to about Donald Trump. and look at what is actually happening. Now, I hope if you've not voted yet, you go and vote, and you vote for those candidates who most clearly reflect the values that you stand for. And you can find out more. There's a lot of resources out there. iVoterGuide.com is one that tells you where the candidates stand on the various issues. But again, as we get through this election and we move forward, I encourage you not to get distracted, but stay focused on what we're trying to do. What are we trying to do? We're trying to restore these fundamental freedoms and understandings and understanding in this country. Number one, that life, all life, is precious. It's sacred. Why? Because it's created in the image of God. And when you have policies that move us toward that understanding of human life, then we need to support that, regardless of all the other chatter that we hear out there. Same thing with religious freedom and the sacredness of marriage as a union of a man and woman. You know, the policies that move us closer to those ideals that build a solid society. Don't get distracted. Keep your eye on the prize. Now, we know, unless some critic get a hold of that and say, oh, you're using scripture for political purposes. No, I'm not. I know what Paul was talking about. Paul was talking about running the race, the spiritual race, the prize being heaven, that relationship with God. That's ultimately what we run for. But if Paul was willing to talk about these essential qualities of determination, discipline, and focus, that they are essential to success, well, the same is true for what we do in this life. And so I just encourage you to stay focused, be disciplined, and have determination to leave this country in better shape than what we found it, so that our children and grandchildren can live in a country where they're free to worship God, not in the free in the recesses of their home or within the four walls of a church, but beyond that, to live their faith in public, whatever their occupation may be. That's religious freedom. That's what we need to defend. So I just encourage you to stay the course. Now, I have to apologize. We're having some issues with the phones. I know some of you are calling in, trying to get in, and something went haywire. So I apologize for that. I was wanting to hear from you, but never fear. We're going to be back after the election, and I'm going to ask you the same question all right, let me give you another number real quick. We've got a workaround here. 800-281-8255. 800-281-8255. Call that number, and I'm still going to try to get to a couple of you, but look, we're going to continue talking about this because this is important. I want to know, and I think others need to know, what motivates your vote. What is it that's at the top of your list in terms of, yes, I see that we worked around. The board is about to explode with calls coming in. So, Bobby, let me know when we're ready to go to the first caller. Hey, folks, again, I apologize. There's something, I don't know what happened here, but something went haywire with our phones. But we're working around it. All right, let's go to Donna in Missouri. Donna, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you. I think you said it all, but I just do want to reiterate that religious freedom has to be at the top, because if we lose our religious freedom and we cannot worship or even mention the name Jesus, what's going to replace that? Islam? Because that's their agenda, Tony. And once we lose that, then we will be under persecution like no one in this country has probably ever really experienced. I know in a lot of other Middle Eastern countries they have, but really we haven't experienced it to that effect yet. Yeah. And that's what scares me.
Well, Donna, thank you so much for the call. I think most Christians get it. Religious freedom, especially if you are seeking to follow Christ in every aspect of your life, that means in your employment, that means the way you raise your kids, that means the way you interact with your neighbors, and all that's positive when we live according to the teachings of Christ and of Scripture. But if we can't do that, we can't truly worship Him. If Paul instructed the believers in the New Testament, saying no matter what you do, whether you eat and drink, do all for the glory of God, if eating and drinking was to be done for the glory of God, isn't working? In fact, this country, if you read back some of the secular historians, talk about the success of America was based upon the Puritan work ethic, which the Puritans saw their work as an extension of their worship. So, Donna, you're absolutely right. Let's go to Mark in Kansas. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello there, sir.
All right. What's top of your list, Mark?
Yes, it's Martin. Pro-life candidate would be the top of the list, but not only that, but there might be a candidate we disagree with or whatever, but we want to get a candidate that provides an environment for the Christian agenda, like Trump, he had a lot of issues, but we're all sinners, we've all fallen short.
Martin, a great point. Again, keep your eye on the prize, as I was saying. Jerome in Louisiana, very quick, you got 30 seconds.
Yeah, calling about basically my concerns are I have four kids and what is actually going on.
Jerome in Louisiana, very quick, you got 30 seconds.
Yeah, turn your radio. We lost him. Four kids, that's reason to be concerned. You want to make sure that you are preserving religious freedom and the ability to influence the culture in which our children live in. And being able to pass on those values and teach them those core values. Okay, very quickly, let me work in Ray in Texas. Ray, 30 seconds.
The border situation is what brings me out. I've been in the military around the world, and nobody just lets people come in. This caravan is kind of like a bullying caravan. They're going to do what they want. And I'm afraid also, having worked in the military at the border, of what's coming in with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Weapons and other things that if you get a massive amount of people coming in, you could get some serious threats to our safety and security.
Thank you, Ray. I made those exact same points yesterday on CNN when I was talking about what was happening on the border. And you're absolutely right. Other countries are nowhere near as generous as America is when in terms of who can come into the country and who can become a citizen. All right. You hear that music. We're out of time. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but we're going to continue this conversation throughout the rest of the week. Tonight, beginning at 7:35 Eastern time, if you want to get our take on the election results, tune in. Go to TonyPerkins.com, 7:35 Eastern tonight. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6. When you've done everything you could do, pray, prepared, and standing. You got it. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.